movements and the energy. These movements pass through the psyche much like physical impact ripples through water. Amazingly, you actually have the ability to resist these movements of energy. The assertion of willpower can stop the energy transfer, and that's what creates tension. You can wear yourself out struggling with the experience of a single event, or even a single thought or emotion. And you know that all too well. Eventually, you'll see that this resistance is a tremendous waste of energy. The fact is, you're generally using your will to resist one of two things, that which has already happened, or that which hasn't happened yet. You are sitting inside, resisting impressions from the past or thoughts about the future. Think of how much energy is wasted resisting what has already happened. Since the event has already passed, you are actually struggling with yourself, not with the event. In addition, contemplate how much energy is wasted resisting what might happen. Since most of the things you think might happen never do, you are just throwing your energy away. How you deal with your energy flow has a major effect on your life. If you assert your will against the energy of an event that has already happened, it is like trying to stop the ripples caused by a leaf dropped into a still lake. Anything you do causes more disturbance, not less. When you resist, the energy has no place to go. It gets stuck in your psyche and seriously affects you. It blocks your heart's energy flow and causes you to feel closed and less vibrant. This is literally what is happening when something is weighing on your mind or when things just get too heavy for you. This is the human predicament. Events have happened and we continue to hold their energy inside of us by resisting them. Now, when we face today's events, we are neither prepared to receive them nor capable of digesting them. This is because we're still struggling with past energies. Over time, the energies can build up to the point that a person becomes so blocked that they either blow up or shut down completely. This is what it means to get stressed out or even totally burned out. There is no reason to get stressed out. There is no reason for blowing up or shutting down. If you do not let this energy build up inside you, but instead allow each moment of each day to pass through you, then you can be as fresh every moment as you would be on a stress-free vacation. It is not life's events that are causing problems or stress. It is your resistance to life's events that is causing this experience. Since the problem is caused by using your will to resist the reality of life passing through you, the solution is quite obvious. Stop resisting. If you are going to resist something, at least have some rational basis for resisting. Otherwise, you are irrationally wasting precious energy. Be willing to examine the process of resistance. In order to resist, you first must decide that something is not the way you like it. Plenty of events make it right through you. Why did you decide to resist this one? Something inside of you must have a basis for deciding when to simply let things pass through you and when to assert willpower to either push them away or cling to them. There are a billion things that don't bother you at all. You drive to work every day and you hardly notice the buildings and trees. The white lines on the road don't stress you out at all. You see them, but they pass right through you. Don't assume, however, it's that way for everyone. Someone who paints street lines for a living could get very stressed out if those white lines were not even. In fact, they could get so stressed out that they refuse to drive down that road anymore. It's clear that not all of us resist the same things or have the same issues. This is because we don't all have the same preconceived notions of how things should be or how much they should matter to us. If you want to understand stress, begin by realizing that you carry around with you your own set of preconceived notions of how things should be. It is based upon these notions that you assert your will to resist what has already happened. Where did you get these preconceived notions? Let's say that seeing azaleas in bloom stresses you out. Surely that doesn't bother most people. Why does it bother you? All we need to know is that you once had a girlfriend who grew azaleas, and she broke up with you and they were in bloom. Now every time you see azaleas in bloom, your heart closes. You don't even want to go near the things. They just create too much disturbance for you. These personal events that take place in our lives leave impressions on our minds and hearts. Those impressions become the basis for asserting our will to either resist or cling. It's no deeper than that. The events may have happened in your childhood or at various points throughout your life. Regardless of when they happened, they left impressions inside of you. Now, based on these past impressions, you are resisting the current events that are taking place. This creates inner tension, turmoil, struggle, and suffering. Instead of seeing this and refusing to allow these past events to run your life, you buy into them. Believing they have real meaning, you put all your heart and soul into either resisting or clinging. But in truth, this entire process has no real meaning. It just destroys your life. The alternative is to use life to let go of these impressions and the stress they create. In order to do this, you have to become very conscious. You have to carefully watch the mental voice that tells you to resist something. It literally commands you, "I don't like what he said. Fix it." It gives you advice and tells you to confront the world by resisting things. Why do you listen to it? Let your spiritual path become the willingness to let whatever happens make it through you, rather than carrying it into the next moment. That doesn't mean you don't deal with what happens. You're welcome to deal with it. But first, let the energy make it through you. If you don't, you will not actually be dealing with the current event. You will be dealing with your own blocked energies from the past. You will not be coming from a place of clarity, but from a place of inner resistance and tension. To avoid this, begin dealing with each situation with acceptance. Acceptance means that events can make it through you without resistance. If an event takes place and is able to make it through your psyche, you will be left face to face with the actual situation as it truly exists. Since you are dealing with the actual event, rather than stored energy stimulated by the event, you won't assert reactive energy from your past. You will find that you are able to deal with daily situations much better. It is actually possible to never have another problem for the rest of your life. This is because events are not problems. They're just events. Your resistance to them is what causes the problem. But again, don't think that because you accept reality, it means you don't deal with things. You do deal with them. You just deal with them as events that are taking place on the planet Earth, and not as personal problems. You will be surprised to find that in most situations, there's nothing to deal with except for your own fears and desires. Fear and desire make everything seem so complicated. If you don't have fear or desire about an event, there's really nothing to deal with. You simply allow life to unfold and interact with it in a natural and rational manner. When the next thing happens, you're fully present in that moment and simply enjoying the experience of life. There are no problems. It's all about no problems, no tension, no stress, and no burnout. When the events of this world make it through you, you have reached a deep spiritual state. You can then be conscious in the presence of whatever takes place without building up blocked energies. When you attain that state, everything becomes clear. In contrast, everybody else is attempting to deal with the world around them while struggling with their own reactions and personal preferences. When a person is dealing with their own fears, anxieties, and desires, how much energy is left for dealing with what's actually happening? Stop and think about what you're capable of achieving. Up to now, your capacities have been constrained by constant inner struggles. Imagine what would happen if your awareness was free to focus only on the events actually taking place. You would have no noise going on inside. If you lived like this, you could do anything. Your capabilities would be exponential compared to what you've ever experienced. If you could bring this level of awareness and clarity to everything you do, your life would change. So, as your path, you take on the work of using life to let go of your resistance. Relationships are a great way to work with yourself. Imagine if you used relationships to get to know other people, rather than to satisfy what is blocked inside of you. If you're not trying to make people fit into your preconceived notions of what you like and dislike, You will find that relationships are not really that difficult. If you're not so busy judging and resisting people based upon what is blocked inside of you, you will find that they are much easier to get along with. And so are you. Letting go of yourself is the simplest way to get closer to others. The same is true in your daily work. Daily work is fun. In fact, it's easy. Your work is just what you do with yourself during the day while you're spinning on a planet through empty space. If you want to be content and enjoy your work, you have to let go of yourself and let events flow through you. Your real work is what is left to do after all else passes through. Once the personal energies pass through you, the world becomes a different place. People and events will appear different to you. You will realize that you have talents and abilities you never saw before. Your whole view of life will change. Every single thing in this world will look like it's been transformed. This happens because as you let go in one situation, it affects your clarity for other situations. For example, let's say you're afraid of dogs. You come to realize that other people aren't afraid, and they make it through life. Since you've been afraid your whole life, you suffered while others didn't. That suffering had no meaning. So you decide to work with your fear and relax when you see a dog. The way to work with resistance is by relaxing. That act of relaxing through your personal resistance not only changes your relationship with dogs, it changes your relationship with everything. Your soul has now learned how to let disturbing energies pass through. The next time somebody says or does something you don't like, you automatically treat it the same as you did the fear of dogs. This process of relaxing through resistance is beneficial to everything in your life. This is because it directly addresses how to keep your heart open when it is trying to close. Deep inner release is a spiritual path in and of itself. It is the path of non-resistance, the path of acceptance, the path of surrender. It's about not resisting energies as they pass through you. If you have difficulty doing this, don't get down on yourself. Just keep working with it. It's the work of a lifetime to become that open, that complete, and that whole. The key is to just relax and release, and deal only with what's left in front of you. You do not need to worry about the rest. If you relax and release, you will see that it puts you through tremendous spiritual growth. You'll start to feel an enormous amount of energy awaken inside of you. You will feel much more love than you've ever felt before. You will feel more peace and contentment, and eventually nothing will ever disturb you again. You truly can reach a state in which you never have any more stress, tensions, or problems for the rest of your life. You just have to realize that life is giving you a gift, and that gift is the flow of events that takes place between your birth and your death. These events are exciting, challenging, and create tremendous growth. To comfortably handle this flow of life, your heart and mind must be open and expansive enough to encompass reality. The only reason they're not is because you resist. Learn to stop resisting reality, and what used to look like stressful problems will begin to look like the stepping stones of your spiritual journey. Chapter 17. Contemplating Death. It is truly a great cosmic paradox that one of the best teachers in all of life turns out to be death. No person or situation could ever teach you as much as death has to teach you. While someone could tell you that you are not your body, death shows you. While someone could remind you of the insignificance of the things that you cling to, death takes them all away in a second. While people can teach you that men and women of all races are equal, and that there is no difference between the rich and the poor, death instantly makes us all the same. The question is, are you going to wait until that last moment to let death be your teacher? The mere possibility of death has the power to teach us at any moment. A wise person realizes that at any moment they may breathe out, and the breath may not come back in. It could happen any time, in any place, and your last breath is gone. You have to learn from this. A wise being completely and totally embraces the reality, the inevitability, and the unpredictability of death. Anytime you're having trouble with something, think of death. Let's say you're the jealous type, and you can't stand anyone being close to your mate. Think about what will happen when you're no longer here. Is it really all that romantic that your loved one should live alone with no one to care for them? If you can get past your personal issues, you'll find that you want the person you love to be happy and to have a full and beautiful life. Since that is what you want for them, why are you bothering them now just for talking to someone? It shouldn't take death to challenge you to live at your highest level. Why wait until everything is taken from you before you learn to dig down deep inside yourself to reach your highest potential? A wise person affirms, "If with one breath all of this can change, then I want to live at the highest level while I'm alive. I'm going to stop bothering the people I love. I'm going to live life from the deepest part of my being." This is the consciousness necessary for deep and meaningful relationships. Look how callous we get with our loved ones. We take it for granted that they're there and that they'll continue to be there for us. What if they died? What if you died? What if you knew that this evening would be the last time you'd get to see them? Imagine that an angel comes down and tells you, "Straighten up your affairs. You will not awake from your sleep tonight. You're coming to me." Then you'd know that every person you see that day, you'd be seeing for the last time. How would you feel? How would you interact with them? Would you even bother with the little grudges and complaints you've been carrying around? How much love could you give the ones you love, knowing it would be the last time you'd get to be with them? Think about what it would be like if you lived like that every moment with everyone. Your life would be really different. You should contemplate this. Death is not a morbid thought. Death is the greatest teacher in all of life. Take a moment to look at the things you think you need. Look at how much time and energy you put into various activities. Imagine if you knew you were going to die within a week or a month. How would that change things? How would your priorities change? How would your thoughts change? Think honestly about what you would do with your last week. What a wonderful thought to contemplate. Then ponder this question. If that's really what you would do with your last week, what are you doing with the rest of your time? Wasting it? Throwing it away? Treating it like it's not something precious? What are you doing with life? That is what death asks you. Let's say you're living life without the thought of death, and the angel of death comes to you and says, "Come, it's time to go." You say, "But no, you're supposed to give me a warning so I can decide what I want to do with my last week. I'm supposed to get one more week." Do you know what death will say to you? He'll say, "My God, I gave you 52 weeks this past year alone. And look at all the other weeks I've given you. Why would you need one more? What did you do with all those?" If asked that, what are you going to say? How will you answer? "I wasn't paying attention. I didn't think it mattered." That's a pretty amazing thing to say about your life. Death is a great teacher. But who lives with that level of awareness? It doesn't matter what age you are. At any time you could take a breath and there may never be another. It happens all the time. To babies, to teenagers, to people in midlife, not just to the aged. One breath and they're gone. No one knows when their time will be. That's not how it works. So why not be bold enough to regularly reflect on how you would live that last week? If you were to ask this question of people who are truly awakened, they wouldn't have any problem answering you. Not a thing would change inside of them. Not a thought would cross their minds. If death were to come in an hour, if death were to come in a week, or if death were to come in a year, they would live exactly the same way as they're living now. There is not a single thing they carry inside of their hearts that they would rather be doing. In other words, they are living their lives fully and are not making compromises or playing games with themselves. You have to be willing to look at what it would be like if death was staring you in the face. Then you have to come to peace within yourself so that it doesn't make any difference whether it is or not. There is a story of a great yogi who said that every moment of his life, he felt as though a sword were suspended above his head by a spider web. He lived his life with the awareness that he was that close to death. You are that close to death. Every time you get in the car, every time you walk across the street, and every time you eat something, it could be the last thing you do. Do you realize that what you're doing at any moment is something that someone was doing when they died? He died eating dinner. He died in a car accident 2 miles from his home. She died in a plane wreck on a trip to New York. He went to bed and never woke up. At some point, this is how it happened to somebody. No matter what you're doing, you can be sure somebody died that way. You must not be afraid to discuss death. Don't get uptight about it. Instead, let this knowledge help you to live every moment of your life fully, because every moment matters. That's what happens when somebody knows they only have a week left. You can be certain that they would tell you that the most important week they ever had was that last week. Everything is a million times more meaningful in that final week. What if you were to live every week that way? At this point, you should ask yourself why you aren't living that way. You are going to die. You know that. You just don't know when. Every single thing will be taken from you. You will leave behind your possessions, your loved ones, and all your hopes and dreams for this life. You'll be taken right out of where you are. You'll no longer be able to fill the roles you were so busy playing. Death changes everything in a flash. That's the reality of the situation. If all these things can be changed in an instant, then maybe they aren't so real after all. Maybe you'd better check out who you are. Maybe you should look deeper. The beauty of embracing deep truths is that you don't have to change your life. You just change how you live your life. It's not what you're doing, it's how much of you is doing it. Let's take a very simple example. You've walked outside thousands of times, but how many times have you really appreciated it? Imagine a person in a hospital bed who has just been told they've got a week to live. They look up at the doctor and say, "Can I walk outside? Can I look at the sky just one more time?" If it were raining outside, they would want to feel the rain just once more. For them, that would be the most precious thing. But you don't want to feel the rain. You run and cover up. What is it that won't let us live our lives? What is it inside of us that is so afraid that it keeps us from just enjoying life? This part of us is so busy trying to make sure the next thing goes right that we can't just be here now and live life. All the while, death is watching our footsteps. Don't you want to live before death comes? You're probably not going to get a warning. Very few people are told when they're going to die. Almost everybody just takes a breath and doesn't know they didn't take another. So start using every day to let go of that scared part of you that won't let you live life fully. Since you know you're going to die, be willing to say what needs to be said and do what needs to be done. Be willing to be fully present without being afraid of what will happen in the next moment. That's how people live when they face death. You get to do that too, because you are facing death every moment. Learn to live as though you are facing death at all times, and you'll become bolder and more open. If you live life fully, you won't have any last wishes. You will have lived them every moment. Only then will you have fully experienced life and released the part of you that is afraid of living. There is no reason to be afraid of life. And the fear will fade once you understand that the only thing there is to get from life is the growth that comes from experiencing it. Life itself is your career, and your interaction with life is your most meaningful relationship. Everything else you're doing is just focusing on a tiny subset of life in the attempt to give life some meaning. What actually gives life meaning is the willingness to live it. It isn't any particular event. It's the willingness to experience life's events. What if you knew that the next person you'd see would be the last person you would ever see? You'd be right there soaking it in, experiencing it. It wouldn't matter what they were saying. You just enjoy hearing the words because it would be the last conversation you'd ever have. What if you brought that kind of awareness to every conversation? That's what happens when you're told that death is around the corner. You change. Life doesn't change. The true seeker commits to live like that every moment and lets nothing stop them. Why should anything stop you? You're just going to die anyway. If you challenge yourself to live as though it were your last week, your mind may come up with all kinds of suppressed desires. It may start talking about all the things that you always wanted to do, and you may think you had better go do them. You will soon see that's not the answer. You have to understand that it is your attempt to get special experiences from life that makes you miss the actual experience of life. Life is not something you get. It's something you experience. Life exists with or without you. It has been going on for billions of years. You simply get the honor of seeing a tiny slice of it. If you're busy trying to get something, you will miss the slice you're actually experiencing. Every one of life's experiences is different, and every experience is worth having. Life is not something to waste. It's truly precious. That's why death is such a great teacher. It is death that makes life precious. Look how precious life becomes when you imagine you only have a week left to live. How precious would life be if there was no such thing as death? You'd waste every second of it, because you'd figure you'd always have it. It is scarcity that makes things precious. It is scarcity that makes a simple rock become a rare gem. So death actually gives meaning to life. Death is your friend. Death is your liberator. For God's sake, do not be afraid of death. Try to learn what it's saying to you. The highest way to learn is to take each moment of your life and realize that what matters is to live it fully. If you live each moment completely, you will have a fuller life, and you will not have to fear death. You fear death because you crave life. You fear death because you think there's something to get that you haven't experienced yet. Many people feel that death will take something away from them. The wise person realizes that death is constantly giving them something. Death is giving meaning to your life. You're the one who throws your life away. You waste every second of it. You get in your car, drive from here to there, and you don't see anything. You're not even there. You're busy thinking about what you're going to do next. You're a month ahead of yourself, or even a year. You're not living life. You're living mind. So it is you who throws your life away, not death. Death actually helps you to get your life back by making you pay attention to the moment. It makes you say, "My God, I'm going to lose this. I'm going to lose my children. This could be the last time I'll see them. From now on, I'm going to pay more attention to them, and to my spouse, and to all my friends and loved ones. I want to get so much more out of life." If you are living every experience fully, then death doesn't take anything from you. There's nothing to take because you're already fulfilled. That's why the wise being is always ready to die. It doesn't make any difference when death comes, because their experience is already whole and complete. Suppose you loved music more than anything else. You always wanted to hear your favorite classical composition played by your favorite orchestra. That was the dream of your life. Finally, it happens. You're there, and you're actually hearing it. It completely fills you. The very first notes lift you to where you needed to go. This shows you that it only takes a moment to become absorbed in a transcendental peace. You really don't need more time before death. What you need is more depth of experience during the time you're given. That's the way to live each moment of your life. You let it fill you completely. You let it touch you to the depths of your being. There is no moment that can't do that. Even if something terrible happens, view it as just another experience of life. Death has made you a great promise in which you can find deep peace. The promise is that all things are temporal. They are all just passing through time and space. If you have patience, this too will pass. The wise realize that in the end, life belongs to death. Death is the one who comes in his own time to take life from you. Death is the landlord, and you're just the tenant. People say things like, He's living on borrowed time. Or he got a new lease on life. From whom did he borrow the time? From death, of course. Death is the one who comes to claim his property because it has always belonged to him. You should have a healthy relationship with death, and it should not be one of fear. Feel grateful to death for giving you another day, another experience, and for creating the scarcity that makes life so precious. If you do this, your life will no longer be yours to waste. It will be yours to appreciate. Death is an ultimate reality of life. The yogis and saints fully embrace death. Saint Paul said, O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 55. Great beings don't mind speaking of death. Yogis have traditionally gone into graveyards and burnt ghats to meditate. They sit there to remind themselves of the frailty of the body and the inevitability of death. Buddhists are taught to contemplate the temporal nature of things. It is all temporal, and death says this to you. So instead of getting lost in the normal mental chatter, why not contemplate the temporal nature of life? Why not think about something meaningful? Don't be afraid of death. Let it free you. Let it encourage you to experience life fully. But remember, it's not your life. You should be experiencing the life that's happening to you, not the one you wish was happening. Don't waste a moment of life trying to make other things happen. Appreciate the moments you are given. Don't you understand that every minute you're a step closer to death? This is how to live your life. You live it as though you were on the verge of death, because you are. Chapter 18. The Secret of the Middle Way. No discussion of living life as a spiritual path is complete without addressing one of the deepest of all spiritual teachings, the Tao Te Ching. It discusses that which is very difficult to discuss, that which Lao Tzu called the Tao. Literally translated, this means the way. The Tao is so subtle that one can only talk around its edges, but never actually touch it. In that treatise, the very basis for the principles of all life is laid down. It is a treatise on the balance of the yin and the yang, the feminine and the masculine, the dark and the light. You could easily read the Tao Te Ching and never understand a single word, or you could read it and tears could pour from your eyes with every word you read. The question is, do you bring to it the knowledge, the understanding, and the basis for comprehending what it is attempting to express? Unfortunately, spiritual teachings often mask the essence of truth with mystical words. But this balance, this Tao, is actually very simple. Those who have truly learned the secrets of life recognize these truths without having read anything. If you want to understand the Tao, you must take it very slowly and keep it very simple. Otherwise, you may miss it, though it is right in front of you. It is best to approach the Tao through some very simple, almost rhetorical questions. For example, is it good for a person to eat sometimes? Yes, obviously it is. Is it good for a person to eat all the time? No, of course not. Somewhere in between, you passed over the Tao. Is it good to fast periodically? Yes. Is it good to never eat? No. The pendulum can swing all the way from gorging yourself to death to starving yourself to death. Those are the two extremes of the pendulum, the yin and the yang. Expansion and contraction, non-doing and doing. Everything has two extremes. Everything has gradations of this pendulum swing. If you go to the extremes, you cannot survive. That's how extreme the extremes are. For example, do you like hot weather? How about 6,000 degrees Fahrenheit? You'd be instantly vaporized. Do you like cold weather? How about absolute zero? The molecules of your body would never move again. Let's use an example that is a little less extreme. Do you like being close to another person? How about being so close that you're never apart? You eat every meal together, you go everywhere together, and you do everything together. When you talk on the phone, you always use a speakerphone so that both of you can partake in every conversation. You want to be so close that you're the same person. How long do you think that could last? That's one extreme in human relationships. The other extreme is that you want your own space. You do your own thing. You're independent. You like being separate so that you always have something to share with each other when you're together. How independent are you? Well, you travel separately, you eat separately, and you live in separate houses. At what point are you so separate that no one can figure out if you're having a relationship? You haven't seen each other for years. Both of these extremes will end up the same. Too close, too far away. In either case, you won't be talking to each other before long. Everything has its extremes. It's yin and it's yang. Now let's get a little subtler. The 6,000-degree temperature doesn't sound so good, and absolute zero doesn't sound so interesting either. Neither does starving to death, nor eating until you're sick. But that part about being so close to somebody that you're always together may sound pretty nice. You may at least like to give it a shot. If so, it's because your pendulum has been swung in the opposite direction for too long. You've had too much time alone, too many dinners alone, too many movies alone, and too much traveling alone. In other words, your pendulum has swung off-center. From science, we know that if you pull a pendulum 30 degrees to the right, it will swing back until it's 30 degrees to the left. You don't need Lao Tzu to tell you this. All the laws are the same, inner laws and outer laws. The same principles drive everything in this world. If you pull a pendulum out one way, it will swing back just that far the other way. If you've been starving for days and somebody puts food in front of you, you won't be polite while you're eating. You will shove the food into your mouth like an animal. The degree to which you will act like an animal is the exact degree to which you were starved enough to bring up your animal instincts. So where is the Tao? The Tao is in the middle. It's the place where there is no energy pushing in either direction. The pendulum has been permitted to come to balance concerning food, relationships, sex, money, doing, not doing, and everything else. Everything has its yin and yang. The way is the place in which these forces balance quietly. And indeed, unless you go out of the way, they will tend to stay in peaceful harmony. If you want to understand the Tao, you must take a closer look at what lies between the two extremes. This is because neither extreme can last. How long can a pendulum stay at one of its outermost positions? It can only remain there for a moment. How long can a pendulum stay at rest? It can remain there forever, because there are no forces moving it out of balance. That is the Tao. It is the center. But that does not mean that it stays static and fixed. We're about to see that it's much more dynamic than that. First, you have to realize that since everything has its yin and yang, everything has its own balance point. It is the harmony of all these balance points woven together that forms the Tao. This overall balance maintains its equilibrium as it moves through time and space. Its power is phenomenal. If you want to imagine the power of the Tao, imagine how much energy is wasted swinging sideways. Suppose you want to go from point A to point B, but instead of walking there directly, you move from side to side like a sine wave. That would take a long time, and you would waste a lot of energy. In other words, it's not efficient to oscillate around the path. To be efficient, you must center all of your energies on the path. If you do this, the energies that used to be wasted swinging sideways will get pulled into the center. This concentration of energies is used to accomplish the given task much more efficiently. This is the power of the Tao. When you stop swinging between the opposites, you'll find that you have far more energy than you ever imagined. That which takes somebody else hours will take you minutes. That which wears out other people will draw very little of your energy. That's the difference between struggling with the opposites versus staying centered in order to get something done. This principle holds true in every aspect of life. If you are in balance, you eat when it is time to eat, in a way that maintains the health of your body. To do otherwise is to waste energy dealing with the effects of eating too little, eating too much, or eating the wrong foods. It is much more efficient to deal with the body in a balanced manner than to be burdened with the effects of the extremes. Basically, you waste tremendous energy at the extremes. The more extreme it is, the more it becomes a full-time project. For example, the relationship in which you insist upon being together all the time would be a full-time job. The only way you could have another job is if you both did the same work at the same desk. At the other extreme, if you had no relationship and you were lonely and depressed all the time, you couldn't accomplish much. So again, it takes all your energy to do the extremes. The inefficiency of your actions is determined by how many degrees off-center you are. You will be that much less able to use your energy for living life because you are using it to adjust for the pendulum swings. Extremes are good teachers. When you examine the extremes, it's easy to see the effects of imbalanced behavior patterns. Let's take the example of a chain smoker. He always has a cigarette in his mouth, and he's constantly lighting up another. A meaningful percentage of his life is involved in smoking. He's buying cigarettes, lighting cigarettes, and smoking cigarettes. He's also very busy trying to find places where he's allowed to smoke. And since he doesn't like having to go outside to light up, he's joining the committees in favor of allowing smoking in public places. Notice how much of his energy is going into smoking. Now imagine that he decides to quit. Not a single cigarette anymore. If a year later you ask him what he did last year, he will tell you that he quit smoking. That was his life for the past year. First he tried the chewing gum, but that didn't really help. Then he tried the patch. When that didn't work, he moved on to hypnotherapy. Because the pendulum was so far to one extreme with his smoking, it had to swing to the opposite extreme in order for him to stop smoking. Both extremes were a tremendous waste of time, energy, and effort that could have gone into more productive aspects of his life. When you spend your energy trying to maintain the extremes, nothing goes forward. You get stuck in a rut. The more extreme you are, the less forward movement there is. You carve a groove and you get stuck in it. Then there's no energy moving you in the Tao. It's all being spent serving the extremes. The way is in the middle because that's the place where the energies are balanced. But how do you stop the pendulum from swinging to the outer edges? Amazingly enough, you do this by leaving it alone. It won't keep swinging to the extremes unless you feed the extremes with energy. Just let the extremes go. Don't participate in them, and the pendulum will naturally come toward the center. As it comes to the center, you will get filled with energy. This is because all the energy that had been wasted is now available to you. If you choose to center and not participate in the extremes, you will come to know the Tao. You don't grab it. You don't even touch it. It's just what the energy does when it's not being used to swing toward the extremes. It finds its own way to the center of each event that takes place in life and remains quietly in the middle. The Tao is hollow, empty. Like the eye of a hurricane, its power is its emptiness. All things swirl around it, but it is unmoved. The swirl of life draws its energy from the center, and the center draws its energy from the swirl of life. All these laws are the same, in weather, in nature, and in every aspect of your life. As you center by not participating in the swings, the energies will naturally find their balance. You will become much clearer because so much energy is flowing up in you. The experience of being present in each moment will become your natural state. You won't be fixated on certain things or caught up in thoughts about the opposites. As you get clearer, life's events will actually seem to unfold in slow motion. Once this happens, events will no longer seem confusing or overwhelming, no matter what they are. This is quite different from how most people live. If they're driving a car and somebody cuts them off, they get upset for the next hour, or maybe for the rest of the day. For the being who is in the Tao, events take place and last just as long as they're taking place. That's it. If you're driving and somebody cuts you off, you feel your energy start to pull off center. You actually feel it in your heart. As you let go, it comes back to center. You don't follow the extremes, so your energy comes back to the current moment. When the next event happens, you're there. You're always there. And that makes you much more capable than the person who is reacting to past imbalances. Almost everyone has a point at which they get out of balance. Once gone, who's minding the store? Who takes care of the energies that unfold while you're not there? Remember, whoever remains present with fixity of purpose comes out on top in the end. When you move in the Tao, you are always present. Life becomes absolutely simple. In the Tao, it's easy to see what's happening in life. It's unfolding right in front of you. But if you have all kinds of reactions going on inside because you're involved in the extremes, life seems confusing. That's because you're confused, not because life's confusing. When you stop being confused, everything becomes simple. If you have no preference, if the only thing you want is to remain centered, then life unfolds while you simply feel for the center. There is an invisible thread that passes through everything. All things move quietly through that center balance. That is the Tao. It is really there. It is there in your relationships, in your diet, and in your business activities. It is there in everything. It is the eye of the storm. It is completely at peace. To give you an idea of what it feels like to be in that center, let's use the example of sailing. We'll begin by going sailing when there's no wind. That's one extreme, and we're not going anywhere. Now let's go sailing when there's tremendous wind, but there's no sail. That is the opposite extreme. And again, we're not going anywhere. Sailing is such a good example because there are many forces interacting together. There's the wind, the sail, the rudder, and the tensions of the ropes on the sail. There's a tremendous interplay of forces. What happens if the wind is blowing and you hold the sail too loosely? It doesn't work. What if you hold it too tightly? You tip over. To sail properly, you must hold it just right. But where is just right? It is in the center point of tautness of the sail against the force of the wind. Not too much and not too little. It's what we call the sweet spot. Imagine that feeling when the wind hits the sail just right, and you're holding the ropes just right. You take off with a perfect feeling of balance. Then the wind shifts and you adjust to it. You, the wind, the sail, and the water are one. All the forces are in harmony. Should one force shift, the others shift at the same instant. This is what it means to move in the way. In the Tao of sailing, the balance point is not static. It's a dynamic equilibrium. You move from balance point to balance point, from center to center. You can't have any concepts or preferences. You have to let the forces move you. In the way, nothing is personal. You are merely an instrument in the hands of the forces, participating in the harmony of balance. You must reach the point where your whole interest lies in the balance and not in any personal preference for how things should be. It's that way with all of life. The more you can work with the balance, the more you can just sail through life. Effortless action is what happens when you come into the Tao. Life happens, you're there, but you don't make it happen. There is no burden, there is no stress. The forces take care of themselves as you sit in the center. That is the Tao. It's the most beautiful place in all of life. You can't touch it, but you can be at one with it. Eventually, you will see that in the way of the Tao, you're not going to wake up, see what to do, and then go do it. In the Tao, you are blind, and you have to learn how to be blind. You can never see where the Tao is going. You can only be there with it. A blind person walks down a city street with the use of a cane. Let's give that cane a name. It's the seeker of the extremes. It's the feeler of the edges. It's the toucher of the yin and the yang. People who walk with the use of that cane often tap from side to side. They're not trying to find where they should walk. They're trying to find where they shouldn't walk. They're finding the extremes. If you cannot see your way, all you can do is feel for the edges. But if you feel the edges and don't go there, you will stay in the way. That's how you live in the Tao. All the great teachings reveal the way of the center, the way of balance. Constantly look to see if that's where you are living or if you are lost in the extremes. The extremes create their opposites. The wise avoid them. Find the balance in the center, and you will live in harmony. Chapter 19. The Loving Eyes of God. How can anyone really know anything about God? We have so many teachings, so many concepts, and so many views about God. but they've all been touched by people. In the end, it's amazing how much of our ideas about God conform to the different cultures from which they come. Fortunately, deep within us, there is a direct connection to the divine. There is a part of our being that is beyond the personal self. You can consciously choose to identify with that part, rather than with the psyche or the body. When you do this, a natural transformation begins to take place within you. Over time, as you observe this transformation, you will see what it's like to be coming toward God. You actually begin to know what it feels like to be moving in the direction of spirit. The changes you see within you are reflective of the force you're approaching. Just as rain makes you wet and fire makes you warm, so you can know the nature of God by looking into the mirror of your transformed self. This is not a philosophy. It is a direct experience. Spiritual growth can be experienced just like anything else. You may have experienced a time in your life when you felt a lot of negativity, anger, and resentment. You know how that feels, and you know how you feel toward others when you're feeling that way. You know how your heart feels, and you know what your thoughts and actions are like. You know that space. It's not a philosophy. It's a direct experience. If you grow past that part of you, over time you will actually drift away from the feelings of tension and anxiety. The entire cloud of lower vibrations will appear further and further away from where you sit inside. The cloud may still be there, but if you don't identify with it or hold on to it, it can no longer hold on to you. As you release the lower vibrations, you naturally stop thinking they're you, or that there's anything you have to do about them. As you let go of them, your spirit drifts upward. How do you know your spirit drifts upward? You know the same way you know that you're breathing, the same way you know that your heart beats, and the same way you know that you have thoughts. You're in there, and you directly experience it. What does it mean to drift upward? It's an experience of being drawn further back inside yourself. You're no longer held down to your earthly self, so you begin to feel more spaciousness inside. You feel that there's more of a distance between you and the thoughts and emotions inside of you. You drift back, and then in and up. How does it feel when you drift up? You don't feel as much anger, fear, or self-consciousness. You don't feel resentment toward people. You don't close or get tight as often. Things still happen that you don't want to happen, but they don't seem to touch you as much. They can't reach back to where you are because you've drifted behind the part of you that reacts to things. These are actual experiences, not merely something you were told about. It's just what naturally happens when you let go of the lower vibrations of your being. You drift in and up to the deeper vibrations. Where are you going? Even if you have no basis for understanding what is happening to you, you are still having the undeniable experience of going somewhere. What you begin to feel is that you're going into your spiritual being. As you associate less with the physical and psychological parts of your being, you begin to identify more with the flow of pure energy. What does it feel like to identify more with spirit than with form? You used to walk around feeling anxiety and tension. Now you walk around feeling love. You just feel love for no reason. Your backdrop is love. Your backdrop is openness, beauty, and appreciation. You don't have to make yourself feel that way. That is how spirit feels. If you were asked how the body normally feels, you might say that it's generally uncomfortable about one thing or another. How about the psyche? If you were being totally honest, you'd probably say that it's generally full of complaints and fears. Well, how does spirit normally feel? The truth is, it always feels good. It always feels high. It always feels open and light. Because of this, you naturally begin to center more and more on the spiritual part of your being. You do this not by reaching for spirit, but by letting go of the rest. There really is no other way. The personal self cannot touch spirit. You must release the personal self. As you release it, you drift back. As you go further back, you get higher. You get higher in vibration and higher in the amount of love and lightness that you feel. You just begin to soar. This happens in an ever-increasing continuous progression. As you let go and willingly release the physical, emotional, and mental aspects of your being, spirit becomes your state. You don't claim to understand what is happening to you. You just know that as you go further and further back, it gets more and more beautiful. You naturally begin to experience the vibrations that were described by the great saints and sages of different traditions. You realize that you too can have deep spiritual experiences and be in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. Revelations, chapter 1, verse 10. But ultimately, how do you really know anything about God? How can you ever know about what is beyond you? You know because those who have gone beyond have come back and said that the Spirit you're experiencing is the doorway to God. When they let go of the lower aspects of their being, they experienced just what you're experiencing. They felt tremendous love, spirit, and light waking up inside of them. They felt that nothing could come in through their senses that was higher than what was already going on inside. They drifted further and further back and got higher and higher. Then one day, all of a sudden, they weren't there. There was no sense of I anymore. There was no sense of a separateness experiencing the love and light. There was only the ultimate expansiveness of their sense of self merging into the love and light, like a single drop of water merging into the ocean. When the drop of consciousness that knows itself as an individual drifts back far enough, it becomes like the drop that falls into the ocean. The Atman, soul, falls into the Paramatman, supreme soul. The individual consciousness falls into the universal oneness. And that's it. When that happens, people say interesting things like, I and my Father are one, John chapter 10, verse 30, and the words that I speak unto you I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. John chapter 14, verse 10. They all spoke like that. They said they had merged and that there was no differentiation within the universal oneness of God. The drop of consciousness, which is individual spirit, is like a ray of light emanating from the sun. The individual ray is really no different from the sun. When consciousness stops identifying itself as the ray, it comes to know itself as the sun. Beings have merged into that state. In the mystical gospel of John, Christ says, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, I in them, and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one. John chapter 17, verses 21 to 23. So it was taught in the Hindu Vedas. So it was taught in the Jewish Kabbalah. So it was written by the great Sufi mystic poets. And so it was taught in all the great religious traditions of all time. Such a state exists. One can merge into the universal absolute. One can merge into God. This is how you know something about God. You become one with him. Ultimately, the only way to know about God is by letting your being merge into the being, and then seeing what happens to you. This is universal consciousness, and the qualities of the beings who have attained this deep state are similar in every religion. What happens to one who walks this path toward God? What transformations do they go through along the way? To understand this, imagine what would happen if you started feeling tremendous love for all creatures, for every plant, for every animal, and for all the beauties of nature. Imagine if every child seemed like your own, and every person you saw looked like a beautiful flower, with its own color, its own expression, shape, and sounds. As you went deeper and deeper, you would start noticing a phenomenal thing. You are no longer judging. The process of judging has simply stopped. There is just appreciating and honoring. Where there used to be judging, there is now respecting, loving, and cherishing. To differentiate is to judge. To see, to experience, and to honor is to participate in life, instead of standing back and judging it. When you walk through a beautiful botanical garden, you feel open and light. You feel love. You see beauty. You don't judge the shape and placement of every leaf. The leaves are of all sizes and shapes, and they face every which way. That's what makes them beautiful. What if you felt that way about people?